country.
I've been dealing with other things today.
Far too many young couples find it hard to own their own homes. On the things that matter to people.
Is irresponsible and it's wrong and they should...
We have to make sure that we focus jobs and living standards and the National Health Service and schools. People worry about disrespect on the street.
I've always believed...
The British people...
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to the thing that made me want to start Summer of Tone in the first place, which is the idea of rewatching the 1997 election. And I'm gonna have my ability to pause it and so on, but I'm gonna try to not pause it as much as I usually do on these things. Otherwise, we'll never get through it. I've only set myself the challenge of watching the first hour tonight, but let's see how it goes. If things go well, we may even watch the second hour, see how we feel, shall we? All right, so let's sit back and make a start.
Instant responsible, allegedly. Have I got news for you on BBC Two in 5 minutes?
Oh, and that'll be fine. Angus Deaton.
A 3 hour special from the election night armistice. Live and uninterrupted, this is BBC One.
There he is. I should have said, by the way, to people coming in, welcome. I do sell courses, of course. Do buy the Trivium. I won't give the whole spiel again. Join the channel. Subscribe to the Substack. Most importantly of all, let's have a little watch of the 1997 election. The World Wide Web. Information superhighway.
Good evening. For weeks, we've watched the politicians slugging it out together. Tonight, at last, we hear the voters' verdict as they tell us who's won. If the opinion polls through this campaign are borne out tonight, we're likely to see one of the biggest political upsets since the Tories were swept out of office in 1945. It is, at any rate, going to be a very, very exciting political night. We are already at all the places that matter. The Count at Sedgefield for Tony Blair, his Labour Club, with the Tories in Huntingdon, with the Liberal Democrats in Yeovil. We'll be following the party leaders, we'll be at the party headquarters, we'll be at the key marginal seats where the battles are being fought and people are discovering whether they've lost or won. In a moment, when the polls close, I'll bring you what I really promise is the last poll of this election, our exit poll based on talking to people today as they came out of the voting booths and said how they'd cast their vote. The last poll, that is, before we add up the real votes. All through the night, politicians will be coming here and be called to account by Jeremy Paxman.
Yes, over the next 18 hours, we shall have a succession of victors, vanquished and walking wounded up here to explain what went right, what went wrong. And
I'll just say, I've always kind of dug the utter smugness of Paxman. But over the years, I've come to realise that he is very much, as you'll see, a kind of regime stooge at the end of the day is what Paxman is, but he does have this kind of arrogant air about him, which I appreciate as a pro wrestling fan.
And what happens now in their respective parties? We'll be joined in a moment by Michael Portillo, with us already Neil Kinnock and David Steele.
And here, all the results are phoned into us from across the country. We don't jump the gun. We wait till the returning officer has announced them. We're not even going to guess the very safest seats. And when the facts are marshalled, they're given to Peter Snow, who will illustrate what's happened on the battlefield.
Yes, David, and we'll be illustrating this battle for power in a more adventurous and inventive way than we've ever done before. Now, of course, the battle will be won or lost in these key battleground seats, all blue in the last Parliament, Conservatives defending themselves against the Labour, the Liberal Democrats, the Scottish Nationalists, the Welsh Nationalists, and so on. And How many of these seats will Labour manage to turn red tonight, the Scottish National Party yellow, and the Liberal Democrats gold in their contest to cross Downing Street and open the door to number 10? As the results come in, we'll be looking at the hows and whys of this election and watching to see whose picture will be there on the stairs of number 10 above Margaret Thatcher's and John Major's. Will it be John Major again, or will this space be occupied by Tony Blair?
I wonder.
It's not just the way we vote that we'll be looking at. It's why we voted the way we did in different parts of the country. Our experts up there are looking at all of that, and Peter Kellner will tell all. And over here at the round table with me, Robin Oakley, the BBC's political editor, will be looking at the battles that lie ahead. And Professor Anthony King of Essex University will place this, which could well...
All things were better, by the way, when every single position was occupied by an old white dude. I'll just put that there straight away. That is... I love the fact that every single person we've seen so far has been a white man.
...be the last general election of this century into context. And in addition to many correspondents, we have one special roving reporter tonight, Frank Skinner.
Hello, David. We're in mid-air at the moment. Where are we, Alec? There you go. I might pop down for a cake. We're going to get to Leeds, Manchester, Birmingham. I'm going to get the word on the street. I'm going to supply a sort of a low-brow, down-at-heel counterpoint to your intellectual analysis in the studio. So I'm sort of BBC's bit of rough for the night.
And it's proper lads. It's the late 90s, got to have a bit of lad culture in there.
Still light in the north of England. Isn't that odd?
We'll be back with him later on. And two battle-hardened correspondents back at the front line tonight. John Simpson at Sedgefield with Tony Blair and Kate Adie with John Major at Huntingdon. John.
Kate Adie, of course, in the war zone for tonight.
Well, this is Newton Aycliffe Sports Centre, which is at the heart of Tony Blair's constituency. And indeed, behind me, there is a definite air of excitement. People are expecting that the vote for possibly the next Prime Minister is about to be counted any moment, and there could be a turnout of 82%.
And Kate Adie.
Well, here in Huntingdonshire, the Conservatives are at least happily confident of re-electing John Major. It is one of the safest seats in the country. But on the wider scene, we're going to have to wait about 5 hours until we hear from the Prime Minister.
I forgot how posh Kate Adie is, bloody hell. I want somebody to do a fact check. What was the actual turnout in the 97 election? 82% sounds very high to me. I don't think it was that high.
Minister himself.
Thanks, Kate. And as Big Ben strikes 10, the polls close, we can give you the results of our exit poll. We've spoken to 14,000 people in 200 constituencies tonight, and we hope they've been telling us the truth. There it is, 10 o'clock. We say Tony Blair is to be Prime Minister and a landslide is likely. And reaction from Sedgefield already down there on the right in the Labour Club. All applauding there.
It's like the Undertaker's bell. It's like the Undertaker's music comes in. Dong!
Conservative Party headquarters, rather more sombre scenes. So here are the details. Tony Blair to be Prime Minister, and this is why. Labour, 47%. The Conservatives, 29%, according to our exit poll. That would be the worst result, not just this century, but if you care to go back that far to the Tory vote after the Great Reform Act in 1932, when they were led by the Duke of Wellington. The Liberal Democrats on 18%, pretty much what they did at the last election. Others on 6%. We're joined by John Prescott. Well, Mr. Prescott, it looks as though you've done it this time.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. They look very wonderful results, but that's just an exit poll. We set out to win in those 90 seats. That was our strategy, and if we win there, we'll be very, very satisfied.
You don't look like a man who's been having bad news all day, Mr. Prescott.
No, I mean, the polls have been remarkable. People have been queuing. We've heard these stories all around the country. Clearly, there's going to be a high turnout, but nevertheless, we have to wait and see what happens. If we can win those 90 seats that we set ourselves out to do 2 years ago, we'll be more than happy with that.
OK, Mr. Prescott, if you could stay with us a second, we're just going to hear the full details of our exit poll from Peter. Peter Snow.
Well, I mean, David, John Prescott is, of course, absolutely right. This is just an exit poll, but my goodness, it has to be terribly wrong for the Tories to win this election. 47%, the Labour share of the vote, if our exit poll is anywhere near right, the best since 1966. 29% the Conservatives, as you said. We've never had anything like that since 1832, when the Duke of Wellington led his party to defeat then. In 18% for the Liberal Democrats and 6% for the others. Also,
I don't think that Blair's win was that big in terms of the total popular vote. Somebody would have to double check that. Those figures don't seem right for the popular vote. He certainly won a lot of seats, but I don't think it was that thumping.
So incidentally, an 18% lead by Labour over the Conservatives, bigger even than the record lead that Clement Attlee had over Winston Churchill in 1945. Now, the changes that would represent on the last general election, here they go. Labour up 12% on last time. The Tories down 14%. No change for the Liberal Democrats, and 1% up the others. You'd expect that. Lots of other people contesting this time like a referendum party. Now, let's bring down our swingometer and see what all that means. Here it comes. Now, these are all the vulnerable red Labour MPs vulnerable to a Tory swing. Needn't worry about them, I don't think. These are the blue Conservative MPs vulnerable to each point of swing to Labour. What would happen if there were no swing at all? There'd be a Conservative majority, we estimate, on the new boundaries of something like 27. Now, these are the blue Conservative MPs who turn to red seats for Labour for a swing of 4.5%, something like 55 of them would go red, and that would be Mr. Blair back with a bare majority. But the swing our exit poll is suggesting, just watch this. On it goes, look at those blue seats turning red, they go on and on and on, more than 100 of them, until you get to 13%. Now that swing, if it was precisely accurate, uniform all over the country, would see Labour in with a majority of very nearly 200. But just take the band of error. Don't forget, these exit polls can be 2% out in either direction. They can be even more than that if they're very wrong. But if they're 2% out of the margin of error, they're at the bottom end of our swing. It's 11% to Labour. But look, Labour with a majority of more than 100 with an 11% swing. If the swing was at the top end of our band of error, at 15%, then Labour would be in with a majority of over 200. It'd be something quite unique for the Labour Party, and a record, certainly, since 1945. There we are then, a 13% swing, and it's even worse than that for the Tories if our exit poll is anywhere near right, because we're getting messages from the detail of the poll that there's a lot of tactical voting going on, that the Liberal Democrats may do better than the national swing of the seats they're chasing, and also the Tories are doing badly in their own seats, David.
Thanks very much, Peter. Look, the ballot boxes are...
And spoilers, everyone, but the actual totals were 418 seats Blair, 165 for Major. So the actual majority for Tome was absolutely fucking stonking. Majority of 253 seats. let's carry on.
Already arriving at Sunderland South, being rushed in. Sunderland South making a point always of trying to be the first to declare. And actually, a very useful seat, because it'll give us the first indication of whether this landslide we're talking about is actually going to happen in reality. 57 minutes is the all-time record from the close of poll to getting a result in. That would mean 3 minutes before 11 o'clock. We'll see whether Sunderland beats that. But we're joined now by Dr. Brian Mawhinney, the chairman of the Conservative Party, the man who led this campaign. Dr. Mawhinney, it's not a very good exit poll for you. It does look as though you've lost.
Well, the country has made its decision, David. We have a new government. We simply have to wait to determine which government that is, which choice the British people have made.
Are you saying that you accept that Labour has won?
No, I'm saying that when the polls closed, all of those votes in ballot boxes up and down the country constitute a new parliament. They constitute a new government. That may be a government led by John Major, or it may be a government led by Tony Blair. All the speculation, in a sense, is over. We will find the result fairly soon. I'm a patient man.
But are you saying you think there's a chance Mr. Major has won? Surely your own polls...
Yeah, that's right, by the way. The Blair's actual majority was 179 seats, because all of the other parties, of course, it's not just the Tories, Lib Dems, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that is right from base future.
Tonight are telling you that's not possible, aren't they?
No, I'm saying that the people have already decided. We simply don't know the judgment that they have passed, but we will know it soon enough.
Can you imagine the Democrats were running this? Sunderland wouldn't be allowed. You don't get people like running. You don't get Shaniquas running in Pennsylvania, do you? You get weird 5 a.m. delays in American democracy. So true democracy there in Sunderland.
And I'm happy to wait until that judgment has become clear.
So you're satisfied with the way you fought the campaign and with the outcome?
You're asking me to speculate on the result. as I've said, I think we should now wait until all of those ballot papers are counted. We will know.
You've got a feel for the Tories on this night. They're just like, oh, yeah, okay, we're fucked. We just can't say it yet.
Soon enough, who is going to be governing this country for the next 5 years?
Looking back on the campaign, Dr. Mawhinney, were you happy with the way it went all the way through? Are there things you'd like to have done differently?
Now, if you'll forgive me, David, I don't think that this is the moment to start reflecting on
anything
the campaign.
We
have just put our case to the people, as have the other political parties, and in a democracy the people will decide. We will all accept that judgment and we will move forward. There'll be time enough to reflect on the last 6 weeks and months in due course. Tonight we're now waiting patiently to learn what decision the British people have come to.
Well, Dr. Mawhinney, I hope we can talk to you later on in the evening when it's all a bit clearer. You're looking remarkably cheerful for a man who's heard our exit poll, so perhaps you know something that we don't, but we shall discover that. Thank you very much. And John Prescott, could we just go back to this result that we're forecasting, a landslide on a scale not seen, and the Tories down to the kind of vote they had at the first part of the 19th century. If that were all true, how would you feel? It must be remarkable for you after years battling away in the wilderness.
Well, after losing four times, to win will be sufficient, make no mistake about that. We set that target for 90 seats. We saw that the campaign was going very, very well for us, and we thought that we could win that. Now, beyond that, we have to wait and see what the poll is. But to win is important, and it looks as if we're going to win in very good fashion indeed.
And all the doubts you had about the campaign from time to time as it went along and the changes in the Labour Party, has that all been worthwhile, or do you think actually you could have done this without making all the changes you have?
No, this is a remarkable testament, I think, to the courage and vision of Tony Blair, and I think that will come out more and more. But I was very satisfied with the campaign. I think they worked excellently in all parts. Millbank, Walworth Road, in our region, the members of Parliament themselves. It was a tremendous organisational effort. We had the message right, we had the organisation right, and we had the best leader. And that's the themes we use constantly through the
election,
and that's coming out.
Yes. Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Prescott. I hope we hear from you again later on when things have become more clear.
Certainly will.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry if the sound was a bit bad on that from John Prescott, but we'll improve things, no doubt, as we go along. Now, I said we were going to be in all sorts of places. Let's just have a look at some of the places we're at. Right across the country, we're in the southwest, for instance, Camborne and Falmouth, and Banff and Buchan, up in the far north of Scotland, where the SNP leader is fighting his seat. We're in Wales, in Ynysmore, in Folkestone, Michael Howard's seat, in Galloway and Stirling, where two Tory ministers may well be at risk. And at some of the more extraordinary fights, there have been some particular battlefields within the great battlefield that has been fought throughout the United Kingdom. We're in Tatton, where Neil Hamilton and Martin Bell have been slugging it out, and in Putney, where Sir James Goldsmith's billionaire intervention may have upset things, David Mellor defending the seat there. And we're going to be in hundreds and hundreds of places. Well, perhaps that's a slight exaggeration, but at least over 100 places throughout the United Kingdom. There they all are, waiting for us now, and we'll be going to them through the night with reporters, going to the counts and hearing the story when it comes through. Well, now let's go back for a moment to where we began, with John Simpson, with Sedgefield and Tony Blair. John, do you know now what exactly the plan is?
Well, exactly is probably a bit of an exaggeration, I should think, even at this stage. It looks as though Tony Blair will be here in maybe a couple of hours' time, maybe less than that, about perhaps 10:45, something like that. And the actual result won't come in for some time. That is actually the house, Mirabella House in Trimden Village, where Tony Blair is at the moment. I imagine he's probably watching this programme. And it's a rather attractive little place, as indeed is Trimden Labour Club, which you're looking at the moment. And Trimden Labour Club is a place which a moment or two ago...
Do you think any of these people had any idea what was in store over the next 10, 20 years? Do you think any single one of them had an idea of what would happen to this country?
Extremely excited. Now they look as though they're settling in for a good evening's entertainment, perhaps, knowing the result or guessing that the result is going to be the kind of one that they want.
And John, what is Tony Blair's actual plan tonight? What are his movements? I mean, if he is going to become the next Prime Minister, where will we first see him? Where will he be going?
This is something to watch out for throughout this night, by the way. Blair's kind of media management of this, because obviously everybody was watching this. Some people have been watching ITV, but most people watch BBC for election night. And the way that Blair, throughout this 1997 election coverage, is almost like a rock star. It's like Elvis is in the bill. Where is Tony Blair? You know, is he going to make an appearance? And there is this aura around the way Blair is managed here that is just simply not there in the way that Major is covered doing this. And that, I don't think that's just because they won. I also think it was part of the kind of brand strategy that New Labour had under Campbell and Mandelson, who were kind of running the show.
Is he going to London tonight? What's his plan?
Yes, what he'll do, he'll come here first of all, obviously, for his own result. I imagine he'll talk to us once or twice. And then after the result, he'll fly down to London and he'll...
Yeah, exactly. Tony Blair is in the building. That's exactly what it is, yeah.
He'll be going, in fact, to the centre of London to a party and no doubt a big celebration.
This is the party at the Festival Hall that they may be holding, or we've been told they'll be holding.
Indeed.
OK, John, thanks so much. Kate Adie, with the Prime Minister at Huntingdon. Now, what's the plan there?
Well, as far as we know, we'll first catch sight of the Prime Minister, as he still is, around about 3:30 this morning. At the moment, he's at home in his house in Great Stookley, quiet little village just a few miles up the road from here in St. Ives. And
Kate Adie really feels like a creature from a different century now, doesn't she? She's almost like kind of, you know, hello, I'm Kate Adie from the 19th century or something. It's kind of it's bizarre. That didn't occur to me watching this live back in 1997, but she really feels like someone from a different age watching it back now. It's kind of interesting.
There's not much idea of what is going on. He's with his family and some of his campaign supporters, and he'll probably remain in the house, and I don't think we'll get a sight of him until he turns up at the count here at St. Ives. As I said, that's about 5 hours' time.
Have they given any indication, if it is a sort of landslide defeat that we're talking about, whether he'll concede at that stage or whether he's going to wait until later on?
I think it's thought to be unlikely. I think whatever is going to happen, and from his character and from the way that things are conducted, it will be a dignified facing up to whatever has happened. And that's unlikely to involve just the constituency here. He's probably going to go straight back to London, whatever the result, and whatever has to be said will be said on a national basis. So I think that that's where we'll hear any major decision that will take place in the early hours of this morning.
Okay, Kate, thanks very much. Jane Corbyn is spending the night down in Yeovil at Paddy Ashdown's headquarters. Jane, it looks as though, according to our exit poll, it could be quite a good result. Is that Mr. Ashdown behind you?
As we speak, we're expecting Paddy Ashdown to come out at any moment. He's here at Vane Cottage in Yeovil, and no responses yet. He's had a quiet dinner with some friends and is obviously biding his time at the moment, but obviously some indication that his vote has held up. And as I say, we're expecting him to come out. We hope to see him here in a minute.
His huge amount of Paddy Pants Down action in the chat, I can see.
Boxes have started to arrive at his count, we understand, down at the social club, the Western Social Club in Yeovil. Look, they're beginning work already down there, and a busy night in store for them.
Because it could be
later, we'll obviously be going on down to the Liberal Club here.
It could be quite a good night for the Liberals, couldn't it? I mean, if they've got the same vote as last time round, and they've done better in the West Country, and maybe benefited from people trying to get the Tories out in places, Mr. Ashdown could be in with double the number of seats or so that he had last time.
Yes, obviously their strategy has been to target their best hope seats around 15, particularly in the southwest, and they must be hoping that that strategy has been successful. There is some indication that it has, and indeed that their vote has held up nationally.
Okay, Jane, thanks very much. We'll be back with you. Let's join Jeremy Paxman. Jeremy.
Michael Portillo, are you going to miss the ministerial limo? As Brian Mulwinney said, I think we'll wait for the real results.
On the basis of these exit polls, you aren't in with a prayer. You're going down to the worst defeat in 150 years.
I still think it's reasonable that we should wait for the real results rather than speculate upon the theory. We're going to have a theory and we're going to have a fact tonight. So why don't we wait for the fact?
What do you think was the biggest mistake in the campaign?
I thought the biggest mistake was Tony Blair telling fibs about pensions.
What was your own biggest mistake in the party?
I think the thing that the party needs to reflect upon is that it has done itself no good by showing its divisions. That's what I think we need to reflect upon.
Do you think that on the basis of this likely outcome, John Major can continue as leader?
Well, we don't have an outcome yet, and when we do, John Major can consider that, and he won't need any advice from me. He'll consider it for himself.
But when you talk about divisions in the party being damaging, these divisions were actually caused by people who shared your views about Europe.
Well, I think it takes many to make a division, but the important thing is that parties do better when they're not divided, and that is obviously something that the party needs to reflect
we
upon.
We counted 254 personal manifestos issued by candidates of your party which took a different line to the official party line.
Yes, I think then there is a happy medium.
I'm really digging this interview. I don't know why. I'm getting off on classic Paxman versus Portillo, old school.
Between the discipline that is required to keep a party looking credible and attractive to the electorate and the Maoist imposition of control of thought and deed.
I must interrupt you there. I must interrupt you there, David.
We go down to Yeovil because Paddy Ashton's talking there.
Let's get to us then to put.
Did Portillo just talk about a Maoist imposition of thought and deed? You see, basically we hear it right there. Labour undertone were organised, they had fantastic message discipline. They worked almost like a military unit. And we just heard it all there. They were disorganized. Every, 100 MPs, 100 different manifestos. And Portillo basically talking about the idea of having a party manifesto as a Maoist imposition. Mental comment by Portillo.
Whatever the verdict is, into operation in the next parliament. And to bring the voters' wishes into the business of government.
You say you fought a good campaign. What about, the BBC has you on 18%.
I never believe opinion polls, whether they're good or whether they're bad, but 18% would be an extremely good result, Nick.
Has there been any indication yet of how it's gone?
As far as we can tell, and it's very difficult to tell at this moment, the turnout's been high, and that's a very good thing for democracy. In the Yeovil constituency, I understand, perhaps as much as 80%. Apart from that, I would caution against predicting the results until we know it. What I'm confident of is that the Liberal Democrats have got their messages across, have fought a very good campaign, and I think we're going to see a strengthened position for the Liberal Democrats. Our job now is to ensure that the verdict of the nation, the verdict of the voters, is put into operation in the next government in a responsible and cooperative way.
Do you think your strategy of targeting certain seats has been successful?
Sorry, Nick, I'll come to you in a moment.
Would you be happy with the same number of seats as you've got at the moment, 25?
I don't predict.
Good bit of military discipline there of the journalist. Come to you in a moment,
The outcome of the election, and I would caution against it. The opinion polls have been proved wrong in the past. We've only got a few hours to wait, and I'm quite happy to wait until the result, and I think it's important that we let the voters decide this rather than the press.
Do you think it looks as if your strategy of targeting your best hope seats has worked?
All parties target. What we've done is put forward a very, very clear message to the electorate, and they've responded to it. If indeed the opinion polls are right, then we will have doubled our vote in the course of this campaign. That's a tremendous mandate for the things that we've been standing for: more investment in education, more investment in the health service, and we'll try and carry that through into the next government. I think that's really sufficient, folks. Thanks very much indeed. All the best.
Cheers.
Lukey.
Michael Portillo, before we went away to Paddy Ashton there, you were saying the big mistake in your party had been that you had appeared divided. If John Major is incapable of uniting the party, who would be?
Well, what I said before was that a party needs to be united, and that's what the party needs to reflect upon. We don't know the result of the election yet, but whatever the result is, I'm sure the Conservatives could have done better than they will have done if over the last few years they had been more united. And therefore, what I'm saying is, the important thing is for the party to find the way of being united in the future.
But didn't the divisions in your party start when John Redwood challenged for the leadership?
No, I think they go back a good deal further than that.
So you're riven from top to toe and have been for many years?
No, we had one single disagreement on the single currency, and that matter, I think, made it more difficult for us to be a credible party presenting ourselves to the public. Whatever the result may have been tonight, I'm sure we could have done better.
The Tories have always had this problem, by the way. If you look at them in power for the past 13 years, they're always on different pages. They've got this kind of mental idea that different people can have different ideas and still be in the same party. Fucking mental. No, You all have to have this. You all have to be like Tone's cabinet. Everybody with the same ideas. Everybody with the same message. Everybody with the same policies. This is why the Tory party always end up in what they call a psychodrama, because they're always disorganized like this. They're never on the same page.
It has not been so.
If you have gone down to this sort of defeat, can John Major stay as leader?
We haven't got a result yet. John Major will consider the result when we have one.
But on the basis of this prediction, it is likely that you will be one of the few cabinet ministers who keeps his seat. You, Michael Heseltine, John Major, but all those people like Michael Howard, Malcolm Rifkind, Michael...
Spoilers, everyone. Portillo does not keep his seat, and that's going to be amazing when we get to it. But anyway...
They will all have gone.
Well, I'm not going to make any assumptions about the result, and I'm not quite sure why you're so impatient to do so.
Michael Portillo, thank you. David?
Thanks, Jeremy. Well, I wonder why we're impatient. We're not going to be impatient for too long, because the count is going on helter-skelter everywhere, all over the United Kingdom at the moment. But there is a slight drawback this year, that the councils in England, county councils, and some of the unitary authorities are also balloting today, and therefore when the ballot boxes arrive, the voting papers have to be sorted out between the parliamentary constituency and the council constituencies. It's going to mean that we hear rather more from Scotland, for instance, which is of course an interesting...
I mean, if nothing else, I thought it'd be lovely just to watch Britain in 1997, everybody well-spoken, everybody white, no bloody, like, token diversity inclusions. Oh, let's go to Lizzo to see what she thinks. Let's go to this random black dude to see what he has to say, which is basically what watching the BBC is like now. Isn't it just nice and lovely and calm? This is what the country could have been. Oh, well.
Interesting. Battle with the SNP there and in Wales before we hear so much from England and Northern Ireland, of course, mainly comes in tomorrow. So, but anyway, if 57 minutes is right, we should get something by the hour, by 11 o'clock with a bit of luck. But anyway, let's now have a look at what really matters tonight, which is the battleground, where this battle is being fought out. Peter.
Yes, David, well, these are the seats that will decide it. Now, they're all blue here because the Tories won them at the last Parliament, but the opposition are on the attack here. What we've done is we've ranked these defensive Tory blocks of blue depending on the majority they had in the last Parliament. Eastwood in Glasgow, for example, a big 7,000 majority there for the Tories, so a shocking great big blue block. Here is Ian Lang in Galloway, for example, a rather smaller blue block. Down here, a very tiny tile of blue indeed, in Brecon and Radnorshire, the Liberal Democrats are chasing that seat. Now, let me point you to one, Tynemouth. Here's a typical middle-sized blue block. Swing required 5% for Mr. Blair to take Tynemouth. If he takes that, but not many more blocks above that, he's in with a tight majority. If he takes a seat like Scarborough and Whitby, wow, he's going to get a huge landslide. So what we can do now is we can just line up all these blocks like a great staircase, starting with the lower ones over there, right down the corner. There's all this low ones, so the staircase gets higher and higher and higher and higher. The mountains of Tory strongholds are up on the right here. Let's bring them up so you can read them quite clearly. And we've ranked them then by order of vulnerability to the opposition from the Tories. The most vulnerable of all, the Vale of Glamorgan, 19 votes only, separated Walter Sweeney from his Labour challenger in 1992. Stirling, Michael Forsyth's seat, the Scottish Secretary, only a couple of hundred votes celebrating him. He's about the seventh most vulnerable.
Basically, Tone curb stomped all of these. All of these curb stomped.
Until you get to Galloway, number 46. All of them. That is Ian Lang's seat, the President of the Board of Trade. He's vulnerable to the Scottish National Party. Up the second column, up the third column here, until you get to Edinburgh Penton's 74, the 74th most vulnerable Conservative seat of the opposition. That is Malcolm Rifkin's seat, the Foreign Secretary. Here now, number 57, just before Edinburgh Penton's, is the target for Mr. Blair. He has to fill that first column and the whole of the second column with red Labour gains. If he gets through that goalpost, 57 net gains.
Smashed them all. Overall majority, all of them.
A pretty basic one of just one. If he gets up the third column, up the fourth column, capturing seats like Bristol West, William Walgrave's seat up here, then he's in with a landslide. And let's just see what our opinion polls suggest might happen. And I stress might happen. Even John Prescott was saying it might not happen. This is an exit poll. Let's see what happens. Start down the bottom corner. And there, I'm going up the first column, the second column of the Labour gains forecast. Do, 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 the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7th column. We've even got parachuters here getting into incredibly safe Conservative territory over here. So if anything like this happens, it's a huge landslide. And notice one other very important thing, that the Liberal Democrats look as if they're going to be picking off one or two of their target seats as well, and the Scottish National Party as well, David.
Thanks very much. Well, now the news from Sunderland South is that they expect to get their result through at 10 to 11. That would beat all records, and that's only half an hour away, and that first result will give us the first indication of whether our exit poll is correct. But what Peter had on the screen there would mean that large numbers of people disappeared from sight for a period, the cabinet ministers. Sally Magnusson, for instance, is in Stirling, where Michael Forsyth might well be in trouble. Sally, what's your impression?
The feeling tonight is, as it's been right through the campaign, that it's going to be very, very close. There seems to have been a fairly high turnout in the rural areas, which is good for Michael Forsyth, because that's where the Conservatives had hoped to harvest many of their votes. But the Conservatives themselves say that although they have managed to get their vote out, the size of what appears to be the national swing against them may just prove too much, even for such an amazing political Houdini as Michael Forsyth. I think at the end of the day, the SNP vote may be the key. They got about 14% of the vote last time. If their sympathisers have decided to vote tactically with Labour in order to get...
Scotland, very different back then, of course. The SNP vote was basically non-existent, whereas now, of course, SNP dominates Scotland. It's one massive change in British politics since this era.
Michael Forsyth out, then the chances are they probably have succeeded.
Okay, thanks very much, Sally. Let's go to John Nicholson at Galloway. Ian Lang, who was Secretary of State for Scotland, now Secretary of Trade. Do you think he's in trouble?
Well, he's certainly in trouble, David. I mean, all the signs are here tonight in Galloway that he's fighting for his political life. And here it's the here's the SNP, who are the major challengers. They held the seat between 74 and 79. Last time round, many thought that they'd take the seat, but Mr. Lang held on with a 2,400 majority or thereabouts. It's a high turnout here in Galloway. They think it's 70 to 80% today. But the signs have to be that the Nationalists are in a very strong position to take it. The Nationalists themselves believe that they've taken it, although they say they think they've taken it probably by a smaller majority than they were expecting.
OK, thanks very much. What about the Foreign Secretary, Malcolm Rifkind, in Edinburgh Pentlands? Gavin Hewitt is there. Gavin.
Well, I think there is the prospect that the Foreign Secretary will end his career in politics after 23 years. At the weekend, the polls were putting him 8 percentage points behind. He believes his supporters strengthened...
This guy really has the vibe of like a grandstand kind of sports pundit or something for some reason.
...in the last few days. And indeed, his agent said to us a few minutes ago that he was quietly confident. So I think we have a foreign secretary who's very anxious and just a little bit hopeful.
OK, thanks very much, Gavin. And now Sarah Nelson is at Bristol West. This will be a surprise one. William Walgrave's seat. You think he's in trouble too?
Well, the Liberal Democrats and Labour certainly hope so. What's interesting here...
She's another word, I think. There's been quite a few. 80s a word. She's a word.
And the Liberal Democrats are in second place. They need an 8% swing to take it. Labour are looking for an 11% swing to take it. I think William Walgrave's best hope is that the other two actually cancel each other out. His vote may collapse, but unless the other two can beat one or the other, then he's safe.
Have you got any indication of how it's gone?
Liberal Democrats say that their vote, they believe, has firmed up in the last couple of days, and they're looking very hopeful, but we've seen an awful lot of Labour supporters here too. The city is actually Labour-controlled at the moment on the local level, so they're looking to this as really a feather in the cap.
Incidentally, when they tell you the country was built on diversity and diversity is the strength, just look, this was only 1997, and you can have a look at these rooms. The images don't, you can just see that it just wasn't true in 1997. So,
to top off what they believe will be a good night in Bristol for Labour.
Sarah, thanks very much indeed. Let's have a look at how many members of Cabinet are threatened, which ones in particular, Peter?
Right indeed, and not just members of Cabinet, David. Top personalities standing under the cliff. Now, this cliff...
the dicey doesn't.
Quite hard. If the landslide suggested for Labour is anything like the proportions that it might be, even at the bottom end of our exit poll. Let's just have a look at some of these top personnel. We can call them dicey dozen, by the way. We're not suggesting a moment that their conduct has been dicey. It's their vulnerability we're concerned, the dicey position they're in. Look at Michael Forsyth, dicily placed just right under the shadow of this cliff. Only 200 is majority last time. Here's Edwina Curry, something like 1,200.
Edwina, pretty much the affair with Major, should she?
She's given up the game already. She's only got a 1,200 majority in Derbyshire South. Gerry Hayes and Harlow, also very vulnerable. Giles Brandreth in Chester. We talked about Ian Lang over here. Sebastian Coe in Falmouth and Camborne. Under challenge from the Liberal Democrats and from the Labour Party. There's Tony Marlowe, the arch-Eurosceptic in Northampton North. Malcolm Rifkin, we heard about in Edinburgh Pentlands, 4,000 majority, 5% swing would do for him. Here is Nick Budgeon in Wolverhampton South West. He would go down to something like a 6% swing. David Mellor.
I actually met David Mellor once when I was working at the race courses. There was a day of Arab racing. And I remember that we had to put white kid gloves on. It's the only time in my entire life I've done waiting, because I used to work on the pork sandwich stand. But on this occasion, we had to be waiting staff. And David Mellor was one of the people I served. And he was an extremely boorish figure, actually. I was not impressed with him.
We're getting towards the end of the risk now. On the other hand, if we have a 13% swing, as our poll was suggesting, David Mellor would go down in Putney, William Walgrave would go down in Bristol West. Michael Howard, the Home Secretary, is really under challenge from the Liberal Democrats. And we put him on the end here just to illustrate the extent of the possible damage that could be done to the Conservatives. But if there were a 9%...
Notice, by the way, they didn't even see Portillo coming. Portillo was sitting there in the studio expecting to challenge for the leadership. So it's quite amazing, really.
...and swing to the Liberal Democrats and the Conservatives, which does look unlikely, then Michael Howard himself could be at risk. So you can see just how many top figures in the Tory party are endangered by what's happening tonight. David.
Well, let's just have a look as a reminder at what our exit poll is saying. Remember, we haven't had any real results yet. We won't get one, we think, until 10 to 11. But this is what our exit poll is saying. A landslide is likely, bringing Tony Blair to number 10, and this is the share of the vote. Labour on 47%, the Conservatives on 29%. 18% for the Liberal Democrats, like last time round, 6% for the others. That 29%, the worst result for the Conservatives since 1832. And that, the result of talking to 14,000 or so people in 200 polling stations. So that is simply an exit poll based on what people have told us they did. And until we get the first result, to tell the absolute truth, we know nothing for certain. Let's go and join Fiona Bruce, who's at Trimden, Sedgefield, which is Tony Blair's constituency. Fiona, have you begun to get a feeling there of whether they think that they've got the landslide that we've been talking about?
I can tell you, when the result of the exit poll went up here, there was a huge...
Fiona Bruce, still a word, if you ask me. In fact, I reckon she's aged better. She looked somewhat lesbionic there. She looks better now, I reckon.
People were standing, clapping, cheering. It was quite amazing. I think until that exit poll, obviously people here were pretty hopeful, but they felt a little bit superstitious. But I think now, with the result in, they're feeling very, very confident. I'm joined here by John Burton, Tony Blair's agent. How's Tony Blair feeling now?
Well, I've been in touch with the office, Fiona, and he's very pleased, really.
We can hear they're pretty pleased behind.
It's exciting time.
How totally Labour is this dude, by the way? This is just a very old Labour kind of dude with his moustache and his... He just kind of stinks of working men's clubs, things like that, this dude.
It's exciting time. Well, the exit poll, it won't be uniform across the country and there'll be variations, but it looks like a nice majority for Labour.
Are you feeling pretty confident?
Well, I don't know whether we still dare say that, are we, but... I'm sure that he feels that he'll form the next government.
It must be a very different feeling now the polls come out. He must be beginning to relax.
Well, what does that mean, Tony Blair's agent? Agent for what? Books? Or what's he his agent for?
I don't know whether you do relax in a situation like this. He's been very relaxed through the... I think through the last few days of the campaign, and I think that's made a difference to the voters, actually. And so he looked the same. He was the same cheery self. With Tony, what you see, you get. So when I met him earlier on tonight...
that is probably the least accurate thing I have ever heard. With Tony, what you see is what you get. No... A less truthful statement has never been uttered on television, I would say.
Smile was still there and... he was quietly confident then, I think.
Well, we'll see what he's got to say. Tony Blair's coming down here to make a speech about 1:30, so we'll see what he's got to say. That's the scene here in Sedgefield.
Thanks, Fiona. John Burton is the man who actually got Tony Blair that constituency at Sedgefield way back in 83 when Labour lost, and he came in at the very last minute and got on to the list of candidates and managed to scrape in, and that's where his political career began. So John Burton.
That's something that Peter Hitchens talks about, by the way, which is the very mysterious circumstances as to how Blair was sped into that shortlist for that seat in 1983. Still mysterious. Nobody knows.
Somebody who Tony Blair talks to all the time, has been talking through this campaign while he's been running it up there, and Mr. Blair has been rushing around the country. Well, now let's go to the party headquarters. We're joined by Jeremy Vine, John Sopel and Carolyn Quinn. Jeremy Vine, first of all, at Labour Party headquarters at Millbank. What's the reaction been?
Well, just a few Labour figures have been drifting around and watching actually the screen just next to me here where the BBC's programme is on.
My
and
God.
Are just astonished.
He's still around, Jeremy Vine. Currently suing people for accusing him of being a perv. But I think he's got a show on BBC Two. And every once in a while, my phone runs out of battery or I use up my monthly allowance or something. And BBC Two comes on in the car and it's always, always, always Jeremy Vine on there. He was claiming today that he just kind of... This guy was on saying about like whether kids should follow their dreams or not. And he said, oh, Jeremy, I'm sure you were helped in your career and things like that. And Vine was just like, oh, I kind of just stumbled into it. Just kind of stumbled into it. And that was his answer, which is a bit often what these sorts of people say.
By what we are predicting may happen later on tonight. One said I was on the winning...
Somebody mentioned he's Tim Vine's brother. He was bigging up his brother as well and saying, oh, my brother's made millions of people laugh and, you know, that's good and so on and so forth. But he was very, he kind of no-sold the caller's point about being helped in his career, which I thought was interesting.
Inside was when we won the election in 1974. And I think they're beginning, David, to unpick the campaign and wonder exactly where it went so very right for them. And particularly looking at what the Conservatives did. They feel the Conservatives campaign never really got it together. They never really got onto the economy, which they felt would be the Conservatives' best subject. They went on to Europe, which was a bad subject for them. On, for example, the Conservatives' attack on Labour's policy on...
Now, I obviously can't do Wood the other way around because I'm not gay, contrary to many rumours that fly around. But I do think Jeremy Vine looked better in 1997 than he does now. Fiona Bruce, the other way. Fiona Bruce looks better now than she did in 1997. Vine, I reckon, was better back then.
Privatisation, which was one moment in the campaign when the Skids did momentarily go under Labour. They said they had two good days campaigning against us as in Labour, and then John Major went to the Grand National and stopped talking about it. So they feel the Conservatives' campaign was almost a complete shambles, and theirs ran almost to plan. So this is the headquarters, of course, where the whole thing was formulated. Two floors above me in what's called the war room, there was a thing called the spin table, where all these spin doctors would gather around and talk about what clearly has been a very successful campaign.
Thanks, Jeremy. And John Sopel, who was with John Major right through the campaign. What's the reaction? Been they keeping as tight-lipped as Dr. McWhinney was?
Well, I think they're dishevelled, distressed and somewhat shell-shocked by what they've heard. I spoke to one of the senior figures in the party who asked what the exit poll figures were, and you could see the colour drain from his face. I think they can't quite believe it. Every day we've been out on the road with John Major, people, John Major from him downwards, have been coming up to us and saying, listen, the polls are wrong. It's much closer than that. The response we're getting on the doorstep is absolutely fantastic.
Cope, denial, delusional. I mean, one thing to think about with this election is that this was literally like a modern, slick, professional kind of military outfit in Blair's team against somebody using like outmoded military tactics from 50 years ago. That was the Major Blair election in a nutshell. It was like, you know, like early World War One, say, where you have like people going out there with swords and shit like that. You know, that's basically the campaign that Major waged. just completely out of, just completely outgunned on every single front, in terms of the campaign itself versus the Campbell Mandelson machine that they were up against. Just fucking hopeless.
Better than 1992. You're left with two possible options. One is that the people have been lying to the canvassers, or the canvassers have been lying to the politicians about what is really happening in the country. Because clearly it is a disaster that is facing the Conservative Party tonight if, and it's a big if, the exit poll is correct.
I mean, can you imagine the level of denialism to be sitting in there thinking, oh yeah, the pollsters are lying. The pollsters are lying. I mean, these guys are out of their tree.
Correct. Thanks very much. And Carolyn Quinn, you've been with Paddy Ashdown right through. What's the reaction of the Liberal Democrat headquarters?
Well, David, if there was a collective noun for excited Liberal Democrats, I think it would have to be applied here tonight. We've got a group of...
Quinn is not a wood, I'm afraid.
...supporters and party workers here at Pizza on the Park in London. And just as in Sedgefield, as Fiona Bruce was saying, there was a huge cheer here when the results of the exit polls were announced. That 18% for the Liberal Democrats, they read as translating into a possible 40 seats for them. That's taking into account the drop in the Tory percentage. So they're terribly buoyed up here, I have to say. They were...
Carolyn Quinn is a woman who watched Birds of a Feather, took a look at, what's her name, Sharon or Tracy or whatever it was, and was sort of like, I want to be like her. I want to be like... what's her name? Carolyn Quentin or whatever. She looks like Birds of a Feather to me.
Very excited anyway before they came in here. And there's been a very upbeat mood in these past few days. Paddy Ashdown himself saying that he's much happier with the party's performance now.
Pauline Quirk, that's it.
Stage in the 92 election campaign. So I think a lot of enthusiasm here, a lot of excitement, and anticipating... possibly 40 seats, although obviously no one can tell. Just one thing to say, so 15 of the Liberal Democrat target seats won't declare until about 3:30, so it could seem a bit slow to get going here, first of all.
Carolyn, thanks very much. And if you could start a little competition for what the right collective noun is for excited Liberal Democrats, perhaps they'd like to think of one themselves and let us know later on.
I'll talk to them now and see if they can come up with something. Maybe let them have a few more drinks first.
OK, thanks very much, Carolyn.
I mean, amazing. David Dimbleby actually knows what a collective noun is. He wouldn't need to take the trivia because he's already got fantastic grammar and so on. Whereas I reckon that you could take the modern BBC presenters and they probably wouldn't even know what a collective noun was. Decline is real.
Well, now let's join our roving reporter, Frank Skinner. Where have you got to?
Oh, here we go.
David, I'm in Harrogate and Knaresborough and I'm with two blokes who really, really, really care who wins the election tonight. Hello.
Good evening.
Terry, it's not looking good for you with the exit polls, is it? Do you have other work?
Oh, I have other work. I'm in the holiday business. I promote Florida homes and apartments.
Are you keeping away from Europe?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
So business is booming? Dismal.
Business is booming, yes.
Well, so... this time next year, John Major could be working as a lookalike of you.
Absolutely.
That's
quite
possible. Now, Dean, if Labour do win, which it looks like they might, what will that do to your life?
Wow, it's going to be... very, very hectic.
Have you got any work sort of lined up?
Well, hopefully there'll be a fair on Sunday at Cardiff, at least.
Eat your heart out, Terry. Yes, you missed out on that one, mate. Now, do you vote Labour, Dean, do I ask?
I do, yes.
And do you vote Conservative?
Of course, and always have done.
It's a coincidence, isn't it?
The Blair lookalike is terrible.
Margaret Thatcher.
Terrible.
When did you first realise you looked like...
I suppose it goes back to
you
when...
You just wondered why people threw eggs at you all the time.
I've never had that kind of problem.
Oh, good.
Never. But it was 6 years ago when he first became Chancellor. And then following his appointment as PM, the rest is history, as they say.
Yes. We've
had six tremendous years.
Well,
it's fun.
I'm glad you've enjoyed it. And you did your best. God bless you. So, you also...
She's a wood. Saying.
So, Dean, are a bit of a gold medal winning dancer.
I am, yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So this could be the one chance we get for the Dancing with the Enemy finish. So would you like to, as I sing Rock Around the Clock, let's go for it.
Right.
1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. We're going to...
This is cringe. Terrible.
David, I wouldn't like you to think that I'm trivialising this election in any way. You know that, don't you?
You can trivialise...
Can you tell me... Fact fans, deep lore fans, what is Frank Skinner's lasting contribution to this channel. What is Frank Skinner's major influence on the Academic Agent channel? That's a question for all of you.
Is it until we start getting results in, and then you'll have to play it straight, Frank?
Oh, well, they can dance all night, I think. I'll just do hits from the 50s.
Where are you off to next?
I'm staying around here for a bit and talking to a few local characters.
That's right, Get Out is a Frank Skinner. Frank Skinner used to sign off in his on his radio show, now Get Out, and I just thought it was cool, so I stole it. So,
which there are many. And then I think I'm going to a ballroom dancing thing and then to a maternity hospital. Well, you know, a usual sort of a Thursday night out.
We'll see you again. The first child born under a Labour government, I suppose, for 18 years. Well, let's just go around and see what's happening out in the country. A number of prominent people have been arriving at their counts. Claire Short, for instance, there in Birmingham. And that's with her son, newly discovered son, who she'd had adopted many years back. Toby, who was a Tory and then said he would vote Labour, and he's wearing a red Labour rosette. And Barbara Follett, with Ken Follett, the writer.
Oh, so in weird. Stevenage.
And she was a key figure in the early days of the revamp of Labour, used to Folletize, it was called. That all was some time ago now.
Oh, no! Don't kiss!
Did they know we were...
Yes! There's Mandy! And oh, Mandy!
Peter Mandelson, who apparently narrowly escaped a terrible car accident yesterday, but he's the man who really constructed the whole of this campaign. He was responsible for every twist and turn of manipulation. He's known as the Prince of Darkness by his enemies. And there he is looking at the pager with messages coming through, probably saying, you're on BBC One, smile. And they control his thing so closely. And Ken Livingstone in Brent. There he is. You can see the rosette, the yellow and red rosette. You can't see his face, unfortunately. There he is. Man who was on the left of the Labour Party, but was actually right through this campaign, very loyal to the new Labour and its campaign. He's got a safe Labour seat there. So, there we are. We're still waiting for the first result.
Did somebody try to kill Peter Mandelson the night before the election? What was that car accident? That's a bit fishy, isn't it?
I'll come in. It's 3 minutes if Sunderland are to keep to their word. I haven't heard any news yet about whether they're going to be any later than that. But in 3 minutes' time, we should have the first result. Now, Tony King, if our exit poll is correct, this is a sensational night we face.
Oh, absolutely. Landslide is much too weak a word. This is
stronger word than landslide do you have?
I offer you the following metaphor. It's an asteroid hitting the planet and destroying practically all life on Earth. It is an extraordinary result. There's been nothing like it, if this is what's going to happen, since the Second World War. There's really been nothing like it in this century. Most notably, the total collapse, it would appear, of the Conservative vote. Labour is doing very well, but the Conservatives are doing horrendous.
People who are wondering, where is Butler that we saw in the 1950s one? Unfortunately, Butler was over on ITV with Dimbleby's brother, Jonathan, in 1997. So we're not going to see him because he's over on the ITV coverage. Sad times, sad times.
Tremendously badly, as you said a few minutes ago, it looks like being their worst night possibly since the Great Reform Act of 1832.
I should say we're still talking exit poll talk. We haven't had any real results in. You have to stay with this programme.
I have to watch. Right. What on earth is going on these monitors here? I mean, I kind of love the old monochrome monitors and thing. It just kind of gives me memories of, like, you know, county council libraries and things like that. But what is this screen with just lines on it? What is the point of that screen? I'm really curious as to know what that screen was and what it's for.
Until we get real results in, and then we can say whether our exit poll is telling the truth. Let's go around some of the interesting contests that have been going on. Vivian White and Rihanna Scipio, Gordon Brewer and Michael Burke. Vivian White, first of all, is in Tatton. Vivian, good evening. What's been going on in Tatton?
Well, while you've been having your general election campaign, effectively we've been inhabiting an entirely different, a parallel political universe here. What in fact has been going on here amounts to a by-election on the single issue of the trustworthiness and the reputation of Neil Hamilton, the Conservative candidate. And that's been the issue chosen by Martin...
Neil Hamilton now mates with Sargon, of course. Neil Hamilton has kind of become, you know, kind of... He's adjacent to our spaces these days. And I'm pretty sure he's been on Lotus Eaters and talked to Carl.
Bell, who, of course, has come here to fight that election. And it would have been extraordinary in any constituency, these events taking place, but here it's almost incredible. To give you a picture of this constituency, it's not just safe and settled and secure. This is a place where the Conservative Association headquarters in Knutsford is, quite unashamedly, right opposite the Rolls-Royce showroom. This isn't just a safe Conservative seat, it's an absurdly safe Conservative seat in ordinary circumstances, and made more so by the decanting of votes from the neighbouring constituency of Macclesfield by the Boundary Commission. And that means that there would be a mountain of 13,000 Tory votes to shift for them to win. But that's what Martin Bell's campaign are still claiming at present.
OK, Vivian, thanks very much. Rhianna Scipio is in Exeter, where there's been a particularly bitter battle going on, hasn't there?
Well, the count is well underway here.
England has fallen.
It's a key West Country seat for Labour.
England has fallen.
Are that the turnout here has been very good. Estimations at 12 o'clock today, that they're 10% up on the 92 elections, which could be good for Labour's man, Ben Bradshaw, who is the first candidate to have disclosed the issue of his homosexuality before a poll. And he might need all the help he can get tonight, David, especially as his main opponent here is Dr. Adrian Rogers, who's campaigned strongly on family values and is staunchly anti-gay.
Thanks very much.
And Gordon Brewer. Did you hear that? Based.
In Reigate. Gordon.
Well, the interesting thing here, David, is that Sir George Gardner, who, if you remember, was deselected as the Tory candidate, is standing for the referendum party. Now, his people here are claiming to be doing very well. They're not claiming they're going to win the seat. And that could open up a very interesting situation, because rather in line with your exit poll, the talk here is that Labour could do quite well, and that this the most Tory seat one can imagine. In fact, the Tory candidate got into trouble at the beginning of the campaign for saying the Tories could put up a donkey here and it would still win. It might not be as easy as that. There's just the outside possibility this could turn into a three-way marginal. That's the situation here in Reigate.
And Michael Burks in Putney. Michael.
Well, the papers were calling this the most hotly contested seat in Britain. Most of the attention, of course, on David Mellor, who's defending a majority of 7,500. A swing of nearly 8% would unseat him. And if the exit poll is anything like right, it would leave him a lot of time to spend on his outside interests. Certainly his officials here are looking rather worried. But the wild card is Sir James Goldsmith, who's reportedly spent £20 million on the referendum party, but has chosen here to stand himself. No idea yet of how many votes he's going to get.
Goldsmith is a very interesting character in British political history, I would suggest. Very interesting character. Kind of almost a kind of proto-Farage in a way. But yeah, we might look at him on a future stream one day. He's an interesting guy.
Or whether it'll split the Tory vote or the anti-Tory vote. Two other points that are quite interesting. All three of the leading candidates are millionaires. Sir James Goldsmith, obviously. David Mellor, because of his football punditry, newspaper columnist and those outside interests of his. But also the Labour candidate actually was one of the co-founders of Topshop and a director of the Burton Group. All three millionaires. And the other interesting point is that very little has been made about the more colourful episodes in David Mellor's past. Both the Labour candidate and Sir James Goldsmith are on their third marriage. Glass houses, not picking up any stones.
And did you hear the curious story that Goldsmith went campaigning and every door they knocked on, the person who came to the door was naked?
Apparently so. It was weekend in Putney. And that's how they do it here, apparently.
It's not how it was when I lived there. Peter?
I know Putney pretty well, and it wasn't like that when I knew it as well. My wife used to live in Putney, so I know it quite well.
Well, just to make sure that you're ready for it, when the Sunderland South, if that is the first result, swing comes in, we will be able to see just what that would mean, although Sunderland South, of course, is a very safe Labour seat, not a typical one that Labour have to win. Here are the blue Conservative MPs that will go down to a swing to Labour, and here are the red Labour MPs that will go down to a swing to the Tories. What happens is, as the pendulum moves along there, you can see that the Red MPs all come up there. Something like 100 would go down for a 10% swing to Labour. And if there were, of course, a swing to the Conservatives, then these red Labour MPs would turn blue for Conservatives, and Mr Major would be back with a socking great landslide majority. Now, for each point of swing, there is, of course, a different outcome in the House of Commons. And so we can turn our swingometer up this way and show you that for no change at all, there'd be a Conservative majority.
Zerius in the chat just said Michael Burke appears on GB News now. Does he? That seems mental. Why on earth does he do that? He's not right-wing, is he, Michael Burke? Really wouldn't have thought so.
...the made of 27 on the new boundaries. Now, just inside the point of swing here that reaches 0.8 to Labour, 14 of these seats would go red. Mr Major would lose his majority. And, for example, Michael Forsyth up there in Stirling would be one of the most immediate casualties.
All right, I don't know what happened there. Oh, bloody hell. I'm going to have to get it back up again. It does that occasionally. It's bloody internet. Bloody internet. Can you guys hear me now? Okay.
Responsible, allegedly.
Let's get back to it. Where are we? We're around here, weren't we? Around here. Let's watch a result come in.
Now, Tony King, while we're watching these pictures, what kind of swing should we be looking out for in this safe Labour seat if it's to confirm the kind of landslide we've been talking about?
Well, we'll listen to the returning officer, and if Chris Mullen is reported as having got round about 34,000 votes, then that means that Labour is in for a huge win tonight and that our exit poll is broadly right. We listen to the returning officer. Wait for the Chris Mullen figure. He's the sitting Labour Member of Parliament. His vote last time was under 30,000. It may go up to a very much higher figure. And if it does, then it does look as though Labour is going to make it.
And those ballot boxes there, there's Chris Mullen waiting for his results to come through. He's been the MP here since 1987. Now, do you think that it's a fair indication for the country as a whole as a safe seat for Labour, because there is a feeling that in safe Labour seat people may not swing quite so much back to Labour from the other parties? The vote, after all, for the Conservatives was only 30% last time, and Liberal Democrats...
This video is taken from David Boothroyd, if you're wondering. It is taken from David Boothroyd, one of my favourite channels on YouTube.
On 10% or so. I mean, how could it be that there would be a switch to Labour?
Well, the finding from our exit poll does indeed suggest that the Labour Party is going to do better in Tory-held seats than in Labour seats,
But against that, the exit poll is suggesting a high turnout in Labour seats.
The returning officer coming to the podium for this, the first result of this 1997 general election. A safe Labour seat, but what we're watching for is the switching in the vote, which will give us the first clue of whether Labour has done as well as all the predictions and the exit polls.
The total number of votes given for each candidate at the election was as follows. John Anthony Lennox, Liberal Democrat, 4,606. Christopher John Mullin, the Labour Party candidate, 27,174. Timothy John Schofield, Conservative Party candidate, 7,536. Margaret Ann McCullen Wilkinson, UK Independence Party, 609. And that Christopher John Mullin has been duly elected to serve as the member for the Sunderland South constituency.
Well, there's the result. Labour 27,000. We were talking about 34,000, but I think the turnout must be down. Conservatives on 7,500, the Liberal Democrats on 4,600. He holds it with a majority of 19,600. And this is the swing, the key figure we're waiting for, an 11% swing from Conservative to Labour, and that broadly confirms what our exit poll was telling us. We're in line for a Labour landslide. This is the first MP elected tonight.
18 years of Conservative rule are going to come to an end. And I am proud that the people of Sunderland, who during those 18 years have suffered more than most, are leading the way. Tonight marks the beginning of a new era, a return to one nation politics. From now on, Britain will be governed in the interests of all its citizens and not just in the interests of the fortunate.
You've got to be having a laugh.
I thank the people of Sunderland for re-electing me. I thank the Sunderland South Labour Party for allowing me again to be their candidate. I thank my good friend Kevin Marquis, who's been my agent.
Well, let's have a look at that result, Peter, and what it does to the swing and the exit poll that we've been using so far. This is the first result of the night.
Indeed, the first real piece of proper result to grind our teeth into and see how it works on our swing up. There are the blue Conservative MPs.
Guys, shall we do the second hour? I'll put a poll on. Shall we do the second hour? We'll decide by democracy.
It's going up past 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 in a safe Labour seat. A 10.5%.
If so, I'll go and get.
We think the swing will be greater.
I'll refill my Pepsi Max here.
Defending, and those are these very seats up here, these marginal seats. A swing like that would see Labour in with a majority of 100. If it's higher in the Tory-held seats, it'll be even worse. David.
Peter, thanks very much. Well, let's go to one of the other seats that will be in trouble. Let's just have a look at the forecast. Wait a moment. On the basis of this, we've had one result in, and we confirm our forecast. Landslide likely. Sunderland South tells us that we're on track for a Labour landslide on a gargantuan scale. It means a lot of people in the Tory party are going to be looking anxiously at their results. Edwin.
Bloody hell, can you hear me?
Results of our exit poll, we've spoken to 14,000 people in 200 constituencies tonight, and bring us the truth.
Oh, bloody hell, it keeps on messing around this. Did we get the results of the poll? It seems like me getting up then caused an issue. We saw all this, didn't we? We're almost, right. Bit of Patillo act. Kinnick, oh, this looks amazing. Right, we're going to get a bit more action now. Let's have a look.
How it works on our swing opposite. There are the blue Conservative MPs that'll go down to the swing. That's the way it's got to go. 4.5% swing to Labour would be enough for an overall majority. So we're going past 4.5. It's going up past 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 in a safe Labour seat. A 10.5% swing in Sunderland South. We think the swing will be greater in the seats the Conservatives are defending, and those are these very seats up here, these marginal seats. A swing like that would see Labour in with a majority of 100. If it's higher in the Tory-held seats, it'll be even worse. David.
Peter, thanks very much. Well, let's go to one of the other seats that will be in trouble. Let's just have a look at the forecast. Wait a minute. On the basis of this, we've had one result in, and we confirm our forecast, landslide likely. Sunderland South tells us that we're on track for a Labour landslide on a gargantuan scale. It means a lot of people in the Tory party are going to be looking anxiously at their results. Edwina Currie said it would be a miracle if she held on to Derbyshire South, and Martin Bashir is with her there. Martin. Well, we're rather hoping Martin Bashir's there. Edwina Currie's there, but Martin Bashir's not there. I don't know whether... Well, we'll come back in a moment. Jeremy.
Neil Kinnock, you'd have died for forecasts like this and results like that, wouldn't you?
It would have been very nice.
Rub it in, Jeremy. I tell you what, there's a moment later on when Kinnock is having to, like, stand there and sing Things Can Only Get Better as everybody waits for Tone to come out. And it's just the most... I mean, God knows what he must have been thinking, but anyway.
Especially as I recall, Sunderland came in first last time, and indelibly on my memory, it was a swing of 2.4% last time. The swing in Chris's seat on this occasion of 11% is sensational. And if the swing is more modest in safe Labour seats than it is in the seats that Labour needs to take, then we really are in for a spectacular evening. And I'll begin to believe the exit polls, even though my calculation would be slightly more modest than they show.
What would it be?
I think a 10% swing rather than the 13% show.
Oh,
in
just the 10% swing.
Yeah, okay. Just the 10%. Yeah, all right. 10% for number 10. That'll do nicely.
Michael Portillo, are you ready to drink Hemlock yet?
Definitely not. One result doesn't make the general election result. In any case, I will just comment on each result as they come in. It's not for me to make any statement about the overall position.
Michael Heseltine says you need to analyse where you went wrong.
Well, of course, if it doesn't work out well for us tonight, we would have to do that. What I hope we would do is do it in a considered, measured way over a period of time, emphasising the need for unity within the party.
He's so smooth, isn't he? He's so smooth, Portillo. Got to give it to him. Look at that. Look at his hairline there. Amazing.
I'm not jumping to conclusions.
When you use the word if, we have, of course, to remember that you were the man who said the poll tax was an election winner. And you're not seriously denying the likely outcome at present.
Well, I've just said to you that it would not be for me to make a declaration about the overall outcome. That obviously doesn't fall to me. But I'm happy to comment on each result that comes in. The first one has shown a big Labour swing.
David Steele, it's more difficult to predict how things are going to turn out for the Liberal Democrats for all sorts of complicated reasons. But from what you hear, how are things looking?
Well, I think they're looking very well. I mean, we started this campaign...
Can I just say that when Spitting Image was on, David Steele had a big long nose, and he was always like a really little puppet with a big long nose. And I loved that when I was a kid in the 80s. And David Steele was my favourite politician, based purely on the long nose they gave him in that. So, but listening to him speak there, he sounds a lot like a Spitting Image puppet as well. So,
and it's around 10%. We've got 18%. That means tremendous credit to Paddy Ashdown and the whole election team. It's been a superb, positive campaign, very professional. But I remind you, we got 18% last time. We only got 20 seats. And in 1983, when Roy Jenkins and I were fighting on the alliance, we got 26%, and we only got 23 seats. So I'm not counting any chickens until they're hatched.
But in terms of the influence you could actually exercise, a Labour landslide is about the worst possible outcome for you, isn't it? Because they don't need you.
They don't need us, that's true. But if this exit poll is right, and there's a big Labour majority, but a parliamentary party of 30 to 40, if that's what some people are forecasting now, is a tremendous difference from simply a dozen or the 15, 18 that I had when I was leader.
Thank you all very much. David?
Thanks, Jeremy. Let's find out from Scotland what's going on there. There's, of course, a different race in Scotland because the Scottish National Party are fighting hard there, and the Tories look as though they're going to be back like they were in Gladstone's Midlothian campaign on these figures. But Jane Frankie is there. Jane?
Oh, thank you, David. Yes, up here in Scotland, as well as the three cabinet ministers you've talked about already, there are other fascinating battles going on. How well, for example, can the Scottish National Party do? They're aiming high. Up in Banff, SNP leader Alex Salmond is confident, and not only of his own seat. He's put on a charity bet with a bookmaker that the Nationalists will win seven or more seats. Now, their main battle is to try and break through the rock-solid Labour support in the Central Belt, and they've particularly targeted Glasgow Govan, hoping to capitalise on bitter infighting in the local Labour Party. Well, I'll be keeping you up to date on the story in Scotland throughout the night.
She's definitely not a Wood, by the way, at all. Also, I think that the suggestion from the person in the chat, given I've had so many internet issues tonight, is that we'll probably do the second hour and possibly even the third hour once my internet is fixed. I have the engineer coming tomorrow, so fingers crossed. I'll probably just go outside and smoke a cigar. Even though it's midnight, I kind of like the midnight cigar. So, yeah, we're going to do that.
Meanwhile, Kirsty Walk has news of another special election programme. Kirsty.
Yes, I'll be telling the UK story from a Scottish perspective over on BBC Two for viewers in Scotland.
Not a word. I've always hated this woman as well. I've always hated her. And in fact, such is my hatred for this woman that when Newsnight was presented by her, I wouldn't watch it back in the days I used to watch Newsnight. I've always hated her.
Starting in about 5 minutes' time. As Jane said, it's going to be a fascinating night here. A small historical fact, the Act of Union between England and Scotland was signed 290 years ago today. On the basis of the exit poll, will the Union be stronger or weaker after tonight? All that and more with me through the night over in BBC Two. Back to you in London, David.
Thanks very much, Jane. Well, Tony, we've had one result in. The turnout was down, which is why it wasn't the raw figure that you gave. The prediction is online for a wipeout.
The prediction is absolutely online. The swing at the general election of 1945, Labour's biggest victory ever by a very wide margin, was spot on 12%. The swing in a safe Labour seat, 11%. It does look as though Labour is on course for perhaps the biggest victory in its history.
We heard Michael Heseltine saying that the Tories have got to analyse Robin Oakley, analyse what went wrong. Even though Michael Portillo was being a bit squeamish, what do you think is going to happen if it's a defeat on this scale?
So much a case of back to the drawing board as buy a new drawing board, I think, David. The Tories will be absolutely devastated if figures are on the scale indicated by the exit poll and confirmed by the first result that we've had. Obviously, it means that Mr. Major will depart, and probably fairly quickly, as party leader. But the Tories are going to have to face up to the fact that Labour have managed to successfully occupy the centre ground of politics, which is nearly always the way of winning elections. And there's obviously a very clear lesson for them in this, that as we have always believed, divided parties don't win elections.
It was interesting, Michael Portillo was saying exactly that, and if he stands as a leadership candidate, if John Major goes, it's clear his line is going to be unity. I mean, he has been rather more quiet in the last few months than he was before, hasn't he?
Unity, 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 as I think he put it in the fashionable triple back at the Tory party conference.
Malcolm Rifkin there at his count at Edinburgh Pentlands. No clue from...
I always thought Rifkin was a slime bag, by the way. Slimy character. Smarmy character. I don't like Rifkin.
He looks fairly cheerful. He looks fairly cheerful, but then he's a stoic politician and a Scottish lawyer to boot, so probably he can put on a good face. We don't know what his result is. We haven't had any indication. It was thought that he possibly might hang on in Edinburgh Pentlands. Let's see how things stand at the moment, then. We've had only one result in.
and we're forecasting Tony Blair to be Prime Minister with a landslide.
Blair there before the dark side riddled all his features and made him the man that we know and love today. That was naive, pre-dark side Blair.
We're saying it'll be the lowest share for the Conservatives since 1832. Purists may say that's not the United Kingdom, but Britain we're going back to, but I don't think it makes that much difference. That's since the Duke of Wellington led the Tories after the Great Reform Act. And Labour is predicted to gain the biggest swing to any party since 1931. John Prescott, the Deputy Labour leader, said this is a remarkable testament to the courage and vision of Tony Blair. And Michael Heseltine,
the vision of
Deputy
Tony
Prime
Blair.
Minister, speaking on Radio 4, if the polls are right, and we have actually lost, then there have to be a lot of questions asked and a lot of answers produced. Well, that at least means that the discussion can start tonight. Paddy Ashton, the Liberal Democrat leader, we've put forward a very clear message to the electorate, and they have responded to it. They've been doing rather well, 18% what they got last time, but they think their seats may be up. Certainly at risk as the night runs through, and we'll be at these counts and hear from them if they lose or indeed if they win their seats. Malcolm Rifkin, the Foreign Secretary, Ian Lang, the Trade Secretary, Michael Forsyth, the Scottish Secretary, and William Waldegrave, Treasury Chief Secretary, or Chief Secretary of the Treasury, as is more normally put. Tony Newton, the Leader of the House of Commons, Roger Freeman, the Public Service Minister, the Environment Secretary, John Gummer, and the former Heritage David Mellor in Putney. Now, Krishnan Gurumurthy was talking a moment ago to Lord Archer, who was going to be giving a party tonight. I don't know whether he still is or whether he's cancelled it after he heard our exit poll, but let's join him.
Well, with me now is Lord Archer. Lord Archer, you're holding a small dinner party this evening. Is it a wake?
Certainly not. We don't even know the results yet.
Well, we have a good indication from the exit poll, at least. What's your reaction to that?
Well,
it's a landslide, according to that.
I remember the exit poll last time, and it certainly had no relation to the actual result several hours later.
But you're not expecting the same result as last time tonight,
no,
are you?
No, I think that is unlikely. I would agree.
And so how do you think it's going to go?
It's hard to tell at this point, but I would suspect we are set for a Labour victory.
And what do you think that means?
That means 5 years of Labour power.
What does it mean for the Conservatives?
Well, we will have to regroup. We'll have to reconsider our position. And we will have to make sure we're good in opposition. And I suspect, having handed over the strongest economy in Europe, and indeed one of the biggest successes of this century, we'll have to see, with the Labour Party starting with such a good start, such advantages, what they do with it.
Well, you've been saying Britain's booming, don't let Labour blow it. Are they going to blow it? Is Britain going down the tubes now?
I hope they don't blow it. If that is the result, if Mr. Blair is the Prime Minister, I wish him every success, and I congratulate him on his victory. And of course, we will attempt to be good in opposition, something we haven't done for a long time. We don't have the experience of the Labour Party in opposition.
Spoilers, ladies and gentlemen, they were fucking terrible in opposition, demolished themselves. We had the 13-year New Labour Reich, and the Tories transformed into little miniature versions of Blair. That is actually what happened.
But then they don't have our experience in government.
Who are you backing for?
Well, now, a deputy chairman of the Conservative Party, the man who wrote the House of Cards, and the man who incidentally was involved in all the negotiations about the debate, which, remember, we were going to get. We don't, not yet on the record, exactly how it fell apart. But anyway, we were going to get this great debate between the two party leaders, or the three party leaders. Anyway, he is there, Michael Dobbs, and he's with John Sokal.
Mr. Dobbs.
And there it is, ladies and gentlemen. There it is. So I think, given my ongoing internet issues, it's probably just sensible and Tony-like not to do the second hour, because it's just annoying when it keeps on going out all the time. But yes, there we are. There's been a couple of super chats. Lady of Shalott says, Peter Snow on Newsnight hated Britain so much that he referred to the Falkland Island as the Lost Malvinas, the RG name for the islands during the war. I mean, I will say that I reckon a lot of these journalists secretly voted Labour on this election, or not so secretly. And you can generally tell, because do you remember Dimbleby on the night of Brexit? It was like a bloody bomber dropped, where he's notably chipper on this particular evening. So you can always kind of tell that the when the GNOs themselves are happy or not. Odin says, what was the lead up to this election? How bad did the Tories mess up in their four terms? Well, I think it's less about the four terms and more about the major government from 1992 to 1997. Thatcher was a fucking beast, and she won three elections in a row. And she would have won in 1992. She would have. John Major defeated Neil Kinnock in 92. Thatcher would have won that election had the Tories not knifed her. This is just a fact, right? But the Tories knifed her over the issue of Europe and the single currency. But basically, and that's where Major was put in, and basically. The Labour, the major government was, I mean, you've heard it all here. They were hit by a lot of sex scandals. They were fucking shambles. They were, you know, you had MPs kind of messaging against each other. There was all the typical Tory stuff that you see now, you know, like all the, you know, Boris versus Sunak. And it was all that bullshit at the end of, this Tory government as well. In fact, the current Tories resemble major year Tories quite a bit at the moment. Really quite reminiscent. History is repeating itself because that's what the Tories always do. They end up imploding because they just don't have any ideas, basically. And they did in the one strong leader that they did have, who was Thatcher. What they should have done is at one point, I think Portillo, there was talk of Portillo challenging Major. Do you remember? You have to put up or shut up. And if you have a look, Portillo gave an absolutely storming speech in about 1994, 1995. I remember it pretty well. And basically, they should have gone with Portillo. And if it was Blair versus Portillo, this may have been a very different election, but it wasn't. It basically wasn't, and the Tories were shambles, as we've seen. So it wasn't the four terms. It was really just the major years that did in the Tories. So anyway, that is you know, other people may have other opinions, but pretty much, I reckon, mainstream opinion, what I just said and what actually happened as well. All right. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be back tomorrow night for Unpopular Opinions. Do buy the Trivium and all my other courses. Join the channel. Subscribe to my Substack. I'm about to go outside and have a cracking cigar. I'm going to have a look in the... I've got three different humidors now and I have to select. I will make my selection. And then I'll be outside and let us play out. Goodbye. If I can find it. Where is he? Yes.
The Right Honourable Tony Blair, former Prime Minister of the UK, founder of the Tony Blair Institute for Global Change. We're delighted to have... Tony Blair. Traveling across the seas to help save all the other countries, but the day you left, the country fell to its knees. So I say, Tony Blair, T-Man, B-L-A-I-O, you're in our hearts. I know you had to go, it doesn't stop it hurting. So I say, Tony Blair, with your gentle face, your heart of gold and strength of God. The day you left this place, the country went to the docks. But I know you're only one man in the world that needs fixing. If I could, I'd gather all your friends. Together we'd all pitch in. And when the world was fixed, we'd gather round the people in their millions. And we'd raise the crown to the new King Tony Blair. God. save our nation.